Was no, what was it? Do you remember? Later.
What was the precipitating event for us starting a podcast?
Yeah.
Do you want me to say the real reason, which is that you and Matt needed more outlets for your talking?
Well, that might have been true.
Welcome to the Stand Firm Podcast. We are recording this episode on Tuesday, April 14th, 2026. I'm Nick Lannon of Grace Anglican Church in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm here with Matt Kennedy of the Anglican Church of the Good Shepherd in Binghamton, New York, and J.D. Koch of Holy Trinity Parish in Hillsdale, Michigan. How are you guys doing after our Easter break?
Great.
Do you call it Easter, or are you like Resurrection Sunday only, guys?
I'm fine with Easter.
not pagan.
That's right. I make sure that there's no difference between any service ever throughout the year, just so that's people right. wouldn't get confused. I make it as vanilla and mundane on purpose, so as not to inflame the affections.
Right. We pick up this morning in a series in Leviticus chapter right. 12.
That's right. We've been reading through Leviticus morning prayer, though. That's been enlightening. I've been enjoying that. But that's a little sort of pious hat tip to my daily office routine. Mm-hmm, but no, yeah, I've been working on removing the inflection from my voice just so that I don't fall prey of otherwise inflaming people's affections on this ungodly. So, you know.
Matt, you baptized a grandchild at the Easter Vigil. How was that?
Yes, that's my child Oswald, or my grandchild Oswald. Yes, it was great. I mean, being a grandfather is pretty amazing. It's all the fun, none of the work. You just hold the child, and then when the child starts screaming, you hand the child back. When the child's dirty, you hand the child back. This is just a great experience. I actually love being a father, but this is like 10 times better.
Doug Wilson aside and just spoil the child.
Exactly. Yeah. We plan to do that. We plan to give this child and whatever other grandchildren we have as much sugar as we can possibly give them. never say no.
We have to get a cardigan.
We're going
to
be gentle grandparents.
That's right. Yeah, that'll remain to be seen. I'm having a hard time believing that, but
yeah, we'll see.
But get off my lawn, kid. That's what I'm expecting. Yeah, we had two baptisms also. They weren't my grandchildren, not nearly old enough to have a grandchild, Matt, but like you are. But it was glorious, although it was late. What time do y'all start your Easter Vigil?
We started as soon as the sun goes down. So here it was 7:30 when the sun went down.
Yeah, I never experienced this. It's a tradition of the parish, so and I was happy to continue. Yeah. I haven't done one in years, since Vienna, really. But yeah, we got out of there about like, well, I left at midnight, and then the college kids clean up and lock up around 1. So it's
a
like,
long service, and it's fun. It's great. Yeah,
it was wild. It was wild. It was glorious, though. So I was happy to do it.
Any other Holy Week reflections before we move on to our topic today?
You're not going to talk about our new prized review on our podcast?
I am going to talk about it.
Oh, okay, good. I hope so, because that's been making me smile. I think I might put that as my Twitter, up on my Twitter banner pic.
So we are recording our 300th episode right now. We thought we'd take this week to sort of reflect on what's happened on the podcast, in the church, in the culture since we started, if we've had any impact at all, some of our favorite stories and mailbag questions over the years. Our first episode was published on May 15th, 2020, just barely into COVID time and before the summer of George Floyd. We talked in that first show about woke evangelicals in the ACNA, so maybe not much has changed. We've gotten lots of nice reviews over the years. We're at 4.7 out of 5 stars on iTunes, but as JD alluded, one of our most recent reviews is titled Sad Men and just says, you guys are a sad bunch. So how do you feel 300 episodes and almost 6 years in?
Nobody knows what it's like to be a sad man.
That's right. That's right. That's the tears of a clown, Matt. That's right. When no one's around. I just loved it. I was like, well, there's a, it's like the, I won't quote it, but you know, in Spinal Tap, the famous review of Shark Sandwich
Yes.
was a two word review that wasn't shark. Let's
Involved a
put it that
four-letter
way.
word, yeah.
And he was like, who said that? Where was that? Where was it? Show me where they said
I
that.
mean, in general, I think I'm a pretty happy person, except for the today. I'm pretty sad because I had to go to my tax preparer. But that's the only. But otherwise, I think I'm a pretty happy person. It's interesting because online, I think we all like people read so much into tone, like or into what they think of as tone. So, in the course of my online and podcast life.
Strong speaking.
Huh?
And so in the context of you saying strong things on the internet, you're
Right,
talking about, I
people
think
who
that's
people
the.
think I'm angry all the time. Oh, now this is the sad is a new one, but I guess
It's on the emotion wheel. It's very close.
it's sad,
Now, it
right?
could be, we should say, it could be that he's saddened to consider us, that
Oh, that's
we
true.
are saddening.
I thought he was saying we are
Well, he could
saddening.
have been clearer if that were the case. Like,
He
whatever
had
your name
several
is.
more characters he
Well,
could
like
have used.
it's very, isn't that the thing that people do though? Like on the left, it's like if you don't agree with if someone is saying something you disagree with, it must be a psychological problem on their part. So it's probably that
Right.
the reason they're saying these things I disagree with is because they're very sad. They must have some, they need therapy to overcome their depression. Because otherwise, if they were normal and well adjusted and functioning like me, they would agree with my political opinions or my theological opinions.
I do think, yeah, I've been thinking about this. I think there's, and I'm not big on the like generational divides, you know, whatever millennials, boomers see, but you know, there is something to the way that people have been enculturated via social media. And I do think that there's like there's a gap, at least in people's understanding of particularly like Twitter or maybe even Facebook, the way that they react, certain generations, and then, you know, sort of the native digital natives, as they're called, who've grown up, like that's just how they talk. And so I've just noticed, you know, because the people that listen to our podcast, who I've never met, who then, you know, meet me, like they seem like there's a different appreciation and understanding, at least for some of the way we may not be sad, as opposed to just, you know, the tweets or the statements or the, you know, whatever it is that other people might be reacting to. Again, I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud, but I do think I wouldn't characterize myself as sad. I would say bouts of melancholy, perhaps, you know, sort of waves of introspection, you know, sorts of Jeremiah-like. But yeah, it's been interesting to, you know, if you're going back to the question from the beginning, you know, I think we talked about this before, but you know, my thought, and I'm not taking credit for this. I'm just reflecting on how meaningful Stand Firm had been to me personally and many others back in 2007, 8, and 9 or whatever, when the Episcopal Church was cracking up and the ACNA was forming. And then when COVID hit, and then all of the ACNA, I forget what the precipitating, there was some precipitating cause. I don't know if it was the ACNA letter that was the open letter. I think that was it. Where was,
No,
what was it?
that
Do you
was
remember?
later. What was the precipitating event for us starting a podcast?
Yeah.
Do you want me to say the real reason, which is that you and Matt needed more outlets for your talking?
That might have been true.
Well, I thought it was you visiting me at St. Christopher's.
Well, that was what started it, but that was just us becoming friends, because I had known you through the internet and your work, and then Anne had gotten to be friends with us because she was, as still remains, one of the people I like to get to come talk wherever I can. And then you were close enough down at Camp St. Christopher's to just drive over and finally meet face to face. And I think even then we talked about the fact that the, you know, sort of the compromise at the heart of the ACNA's founding was going to be fraught at the very least. But no, but I remember getting in touch with you when, but I forget what the precipitating cause was, but I started really getting nervous about the ACNA. I mean, not because I don't love it, because I do love it. And, you know, I just joined it for the most part at the end of 2018 and said, let's get the band back together. And I remember we had a couple of iterations where there was like six or seven of us, you know, David
Well, so we
and
thought,
Mark and Anne. Belinda. Remember that was one?
Yeah.
It was like a really big one, and it just didn't gel the same amazing and sort of miraculous way that this one has.
We wanted to, the original idea was to restart the San Firm website, which we did. And there's several articles on there dating from 2019, 2018, 20, because the San Firm site was taken over by Russian bots in 2015. And so it just ended, I guess.
Coincidentally, you might
When is the
say. I
documentary
don't
forthcoming?
know. That's right.
You can't go
Exactly.
back. You can't go back and search
Somebody hacked
online.
my Twitter account. It wasn't me. That's
Yeah,
right.
it was like hard. It was like everything that people remember from the old San Firm, you just can't find very easily on there.
No, it's too bad.
Yeah. So,
They would see that you haven't aged, that you've been a grandfather since late
so the
20s.
idea was to restart it and the website in total, not just the podcast side, but the writing side too. We never had a podcast, so this is the first thing. So you're right. The first two podcasts were everybody, Mark Marshall, you, me, and Berlinda. Doug, I think David Old was even part of it, if I
Yeah,
remember
I think it
correctly.
was.
It was chaos. It was like too many people, and it
I don't
was
think I was
not.
involved in those.
I don't think you were. You came on later.
Well,
I
we
didn't.
tried one, Nick and a friend of ours, we tried one called
Yeah.
what was it called? Impolitic,
Impolite Company.
Impolite Company. That was a good name still. I had another idea. We had the Preaching Company was one we were gonna do. Loz and I were gonna do one called the Gender Reveal
But
Party.
see, this is
It
what I'm
was
saying. These are all just outlets for your need. You're a verbal processor. You think by talking. I've told this story many times, but when you went away to Germany, I would get a phone call every 3 or 4 weeks, and I would say hello, and JD would say hello, and then JD would talk for an hour and a half, and then we'd say goodbye and hang up. And this was just to record, to make a podcast seem like the most obvious thing and easiest thing in the world. Just start the clock and let JD talk, and here we are.
Well, resemble that remark, as I might say. No, but it was again, I forget, but I do remember getting to a point where saying, and this is why we started Anglicans for the Gospel too, the Facebook page, which we don't, I mean, obviously we put stuff up on, but really it was more of just a kind of a net to see who else was out there that had at least some loving concerns about some of the directions, or at least the foundations and the initiatives that the ACNA was enacting. And thankfully, the reaction at the very least has been substantial enough to continue. I don't think that we're in danger of any of us becoming Archbishop tomorrow or something, but but at the same time, I've been grateful for the response over the years of people who, haven't many times never met, and they just be like come up and say something like, I named my firstborn child after you because of I'm just
Well,
kidding, but I've been grateful for our conversation at least.
I think one thing we were wanting to counteract was the ACNA Facebook page. This is back
That's
in
right.
2018, 2017, whatever. The ACNA Facebook page was becoming increasingly woke, and the mods on the in the ACNA Facebook page were like HR. Like they were very, very longhouse-ish. There was a big site back then. There was like 10,000 people. It was kind of a free for all. Still, it was the place on Facebook to go to hear about the ACNA, and conservatives, Orthodox people, were increasingly being shunted to the side. It was captured by C4SO folks and others like that who were in the admin. So we one of the reasons we wanted to restart Stand Firm was to renew that fight against the same ideology repackaged that destroyed the Episcopal Church was making its way into the ACNA. And so we had several prongs of that approach. One was to restart the website, start writing articles, which that didn't go so well. We were fine, but we just stopped it. No one has time to write articles for without money, right?
We're all
So and
full-time
then
pastors. That's right.
right,
We
right,
weren't a
right. Right. I
post-literary
used
age
to have
anyway,
time
so.
for it, but my church is bigger now. I don't have time for it. So the other prongs were to start a Facebook page. So we did two. We did the unofficial Facebook page, which is now probably the largest Facebook page that has free interplay, unlike the ACNA official page. And then than Anglicans for the gospel, which is also a place where we are both dedicated to fighting kind of the incursion of wokeness into the ACNA.
Do we even try to post our stuff to the official ACNA page anymore? Do we?
I do every
It goes
time.
up. I can't
Sometimes it
remember.
goes up. It depends on whether certain people are paying attention or other people are paying attention, but it depends on who's. But they've lost their credit. They're no longer the place to go. That I think we were successful. Stanford was successful in launching the unofficial ACNA page and the Anglicans for the Gospel in displacing the official ACNA page as the place to go for to hear news or to interact with people.
For our listener, is the official in that phrase actual? Is it like run by the province or is it just called
It was.
official?
It used to be. It used to be something that Andrew Gross, who was the media
Okay.
guy, ran. But at a certain point, when it became controversial, they decided the province stepped back and said this is a private thing. But I remember being asked. We there's no like copyright on these names. So
Yeah.
the the American Church North, the Anglican Church of North America. Is the name of the official, quote unquote, official Facebook page. And when we started out, I just said the ACNA. I didn't say unofficial. I didn't have it in the title. So people were coming to our site, our group, not knowing it was not the official page.
That's right, subversive.
Which by that
It was
point
more
wasn't even
subversive,
technically the official page itself.
right. But then an official from the official asked me to put the unofficial moniker on there, so I agreed to do that. But still, it's been, Facebook is not the thing it used to be. It was still kind of on its at its height in the 2019, 2017, 2018 era. But if you're on Facebook, that's the place to go to hear Anglican
Yeah.
news.
When is the ACNA unofficial TikTok launching?
That's
So,
what we haven't done. We should be on Facebook. We should on TikTok. We should be on.
it's
I don't even.
the
I don't
door I don't
like.
want to open.
Maybe I'm. I know I, this is okay. Get off my lawn. So,
Yeah,
yeah, watch the reels every once in a while. It's mind-numbingly horrible. Like they just keep going. You watch a reel and it's, okay. And then the next one comes and it's terrible. And the next one comes, it's even more terrible. But it's like it's weirdly addicting. I'm not sure how Stan Firm would ever be part of that, but.
I have to. Well, this is to change subjects slightly, back to like sort of just reflecting on it. I think I'm remembering walking around my neighborhood in Mount Pleasant, with headphones on because of COVID, while we're doing these first couple of shows and being very sort of reticent, to sort of speak more freely and boldly in the beginning. And I'm grateful, Matt, you've been ahead of us, or ahead of me at least, in this respect. And I'm grateful for that, that there's a galvanizing reality to courage begetting courage. And I think that, I can just speak for myself, but like exercising muscles of attempting to, with as First Peter says, gentleness and humility, but nevertheless speaking what you actually believe, and sort of even if not particularly when there, that there's maybe disagreement to it, has been a kind of a healing exercise for me personally. Just respect all the questions, all the discussions that we've had over the years of, whether it be about holy orders or racism or sexism or, liberalism or whatever the case is, just having the opportunity, like Jordan Peterson talks about, like until you actually try to articulate something that's still relatively unformed in your own conscience, even, or at least your own mind, and having, not only participating in it, but then also giving people the freedom who are listening, to the extent that our listener has felt this, to kind of consider their own positions and their own kind of relationship within the church and what they say to their rectors or what they say to their friends or how they, that's been a real encouragement to me. And I'm grateful that, a lot of the positive emails we receive say something along those lines, which, praise God.
I can second that. I mean, it's a lot of work for me to do the kind of cultural engagement, for instance, that you would do while we were working together at the Rector's Forum, Chady, where like every week after church, you would just sort of stand up for an hour and talk about the intersection between the culture and the church and et cetera. That kind of preparation for me would take hours and hours and hours, where it's much more natural for you. This was a real great outlet for me to be able to engage those issues in a way that was connected to church, but not in a way that I had to find time at the parish on a Sunday or some other day of the week to do it, I could sort of point people here. And I totally agree with you about exercising the, if you will, apologetic muscles. Like I was actually listening, this is perhaps will embarrass you, Matt, but I was listening to a sermon of yours on 2 Corinthians while I was mowing the lawn yesterday. It was from a few weeks ago, and you were talking
about— It takes you that long to mow your lawn?
You were talking about how one of your great fears was or is the loss of church members. And I think as part of exercising the kind of muscles that JD's talking about by doing this, I have become, if not okay, at least ready for conversations like this to potentially result in somebody deciding that the ACNA or our particular church isn't for them. And me being more okay with that, not of course joyful that I'm sending them somewhere else, but not hesitating to speak the truth in order to keep them.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, that I think that's the plague. The unwillingness to do that is the plague that struck the Episcopal Church, and it is what causes churches to become subverted and die. If you can't speak the truth, even I even go further than that. If you can't speak freely your thoughts and opinions about things.
Right.
Within reason, not being offensive, right? Right. But within reason, then you already have a kind of, you've already lost something in your church or in your organization. There's already whoever or whatever is keeping you from speaking. That's your real leader. That's the real.
That's right.
Of the church.
Well, that's blasphemy. I mean, that's what you could say, that, you know, you can't blaspheme the idol in the room, whatever it might be.
Yeah. And right.
And even unless
to discuss
that was
the shibboleths of our time.
That's right. Yeah. And I think, yeah. And that was part of the shock for me is that, you know, I didn't had paid attention, obviously, to the ACNA. I mean, been, you know, Nick and my trajectory seems to have been ACNA directed, you know, for 20 something years now since
before
Trinity.
Ordinations. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some way, shape or form. And so the question for me was really given my, well, just all the factors was not if, but when. And that being said, you know, I still was pretty consumed with my own as a rector of the Episcopal Church and all the complexities there, hadn't been paying attention that much. And so when I got on the ground in South Carolina in late 2018 and began to sort of become aware of some of these to your point, Matt, underground discussions that were not being had, that were being had in very balkanized, segregated ways, with deep feeling and a lot of emotion, and yet nevertheless never being brought to light. You know, I think that was part of the motivation, was like, we have to get this out in the open, whether or not or particularly because we don't seem to disagree at all, because some of these are so fundamental that you know, it's going to be difficult to walk together. And that remains the case. For sure, some of these divides seem to be intractable, or they are intractable, seems to be, you know, we're not going to be able to traverse them. But there's still the hope, and there's still the trust that the Lord didn't bring us this far just to have us shipwreck. But again, to your point, Matt, like the only answer going forward is not less communication, but more, like not more obscurity, but more openness. And, you know, if that involves, you know, we'd be quick. We all have bishops, you know, quick to be chastened if we somehow spoke unchristianly or with vulgarity or some sort of like deeply, you know, insensitive way. But if it's simply with as gentleness and as much humility you can muster an offensive truth that you're making to someone else's way of hearing it, well, then we have to at least develop thick enough skin to have those conversations. And, you know, I don't like to be disagreed with, and I don't like to get in arguments and have people, you know, have contention, but at the same time, there's no avoiding it. And so if anyone is going to try to model that in a church, you know, I mean, I think we're at least trying to. I mean, our listener, I hope, is nodding or rolling his or her eyes. I don't know, but either way, that's been the intent from the beginning. And, you know,
yeah.
some of them, I'm sure, have been more successful than others. But, you know, as I always say, I make Laza listen to this before it goes out every week, just so she knows what she's implicated in one way or the other. Like, well, honey,
Well, you know,
this is
it's
what we're doing.
I would like to be for the
I
whole
don't make her, excuse
province.
me, I invite her to, and she gladly accepts.
So I'd like to be for the, I don't know, I don't get too much in the weeds here, but I'd like stand firm to be for the province. I would like every rector in every church to be for their congregations. The kind of Edmund Friedman model of being able to speak freely in a way that pushes out toxicity. Like, so the are you guys familiar with Edmund Friedman? Edmund Friedman,
You
for
mean
general
Milton?
terms.
I don't know
Not
Edmonds.
Milton. No,
No. Milton's
Joe
the
Rigney wrote Joe
economist.
Rigney has Christianized his work. He was a Jewish guy who came up with a system of thinking about congregations and groups called system and families called systems theory. And he says, you know, one way that churches and any large group become poisonous is when you can't speak, when they're when you
That's
so
right.
you what you have to do, so a good leader in any congregation is going to be able to differentiate himself by always speaking his mind and not letting any other authority except for God and the scriptures, of course, but other human authority keep him from doing that out of fear. Toxic families, toxic congregations, like really poisoned groups are plagued by this kind of fear of dissonance. And if it, and to the extent that your church is not plagued by that fear, your church is going to be healthier. This is, you know, Friedman again is a Jewish guy, Jewish psychologist, came up with this systems theory idea, but it's the principles involved. Joe Rigney points this out in his several
Yeah,
books that
book.
he's written on this question are very biblical. I mean, the Jesus was constantly doing this. He was constantly saying things that were unsayable before him. Like,
Yeah, I love the analogy that he has about, people talk about clearing the air. He's like, sometimes the pastor comes in and lights the spark. Like the room doesn't need to be, the windows don't need to be open. Like what actually is hanging in the room needs to be ignited so that it comes to light. I love
exactly.
that idea. Not that you have to look for that exactly, but of course every group of people is going to have something like that. And as I keep telling our congregation, wherever whatever congregation it is, like if we can't be the people that can withstand the ignition of the issue, then who can? No wonder, like, we don't cancel each other. We don't just walk away. Like we have means of grace to navigate
Right.
some rather significant different disagreements we may have.
And there's an important distinction here. I can imagine the listener that we sat in thinking about voices that they would claim that we've tried to silence or exclude from the conversation. Peter Volk comes to mind, the Dear Gay Anglicans letter, etc. The distinction that's important about lighting the spark rather than opening the window is that there is a freedom to say the thing that you believe to be true. And if that thing puts you outside the camp, that's the acknowledgement that you've made. The claim that Friedman is making is not that every viewpoint has to be welcome inside the organization. It's that every viewpoint could be expressed, but then the organization has to decide what's in and what's out.
There are boundaries in the and in within the Christian church, the boundaries are defined by scripture and by the canons of your own diocese. So right, within those boundaries, though, there should be an open interplay of discussion. So if someone comes into the church and decides they're going to promote, living together in their gay commune or whatever it was, the
Which
Peter
is not a
Volk
joke, that was actually promoted.
was that's actually what he said, right? You can say, okay, well, it's interesting, but we're not going to be promoting that here in this congregation. You can go do that
And
somewhere
we're
else.
glad that you said that's what you believe so that we know you're not on the same team as us.
So that, yeah, because I mean, it's not Friedman and all the others who's followed him. We're not unmitigated free speech advocates. There's always a limit. It's just the question of where the boundary is drawn. And for Christians, that boundary has to be the scriptures, and also, of course, the whatever the particular positions of your bishop and diocese are.
Yeah, and that's, to bring it full circle, that's whatever else happens after the Abuja affirmation, the fact that the global Anglican Communion, which we're a part of, has reset itself precisely around the scriptures, the declarations, the formularies, like these boundary lines, of course, derived from scripture that we have received, the patrimony that we stand in is a, it's an understatement, but it's a positive step in the right direction that we, it's sort of a global version of what we've been arguing for years now, which is that if every ACNA parish just had the Jerusalem Declaration printed at the front of its bulletin, just when you walked in, then, whether or not you had guitars and screens or an organ and incense wouldn't matter as much because we'd at least have a clear picture of how we were founded, what we stood for, where we. What we affirm, what we don't allow, and it would bring some clarity to it, and I think I'm heartened that that seems to be the direction that the well, it's not it seems to be the direction that the global Anglican Church is taking, and expect, as part of that, that there'll only be more clarity going forward, with the various, statements and positions and convictions that were hard won, and are true and good, and so. We'll see, but that's part of where we are now, which we weren't in even 5 years ago. I mean, we had the Jerusalem Declaration, but it hadn't been restated and platformed to the extent that it currently is. And I think that's only to the good.
We should probably say, I feel we should probably said this earlier, but kudos to Greg Griffith, who's no longer part of Stand Firm, but he's the one who founded Stand Firm back in the day, back in 2000, and I think it was 2004, where he started the website. And his initial idea was that Stand Firm would be kind of a regional thing. There would be a Stand Firm Mississippi, Stand Firm New York, Stand Firm Texas, Stand Firm. So you'd have a Stand Firm in every diocese kind of thing, and it would
Stand Firm
be more.
Network.
Be kind of a Stand Firm network, but that quickly morphed into what ultimately became. But he gave a lot of time to this, and he and I think Sarah High was the next person who joined the crew, and then I wasn't asked until just before the General Convention of 2006. I was asked to write a column, 500 words, every weekday, which I did. And we got good traffic, but then of course after the what really launched Stand Firm on the national Anglican world was the live streaming at the General Convention of 2006, when our servers crashed and we had just thousands of people reading our articles and coming to the site. And Greg had a full-time job, but he devoted himself to putting this thing on a good footing. And which is very sad that in 2015 the Russian bots destroyed all that work, but he still comes. You guys know he became, sadly, became Roman Catholic. He just couldn't
That is
deal
sad.
with the direction, and he went in that direction. But it's still, we owe a great deal of gratitude to him, and we're very thankful for his willingness to put this together.
Well, and he still helps. Like he programmed the portal through which we post the podcast to iTunes, and if we ever have a technical issue, he's the one that we email. So just continue to be thankful for him.
Well, I'm still resistant, just so you know, and please don't correct me on this too, exactly how many people listen to us. Because as I said, like as I tell people, if it's only 10 people, then it's not gonna seem worth it. And if it's something like 10,000, then I'm gonna clam up
Freeze
real
up.
fast, if you can believe it. So I'd rather
I think
just be
it's more than we
blissfully
think.
ignorant.
I communicate with people often from various corners of the church who say that they've listened and enjoy it. Always surprising.
Well, I think
Not.
it makes sense because, I mean, at the end of the day, what you mentioned in the beginning, that still rings true that, and I know we've talked at length, probably every other show about, what we learned during the Episcopal Church, which we observed in like the decline of the mainline, how the relationships that were sacrificed at the expense of truth ultimately, perpetuated and contributed to the decline of biblical fidelity and then ultimately the death of the denomination. And there's just, there's still, we're still in the off in the beginning stage of the ACNA, but there's a, and I see it here at my parish at Hillsdale, you know, a lot of people that have are coming to the ACNA either in college or shortly, you know, shortly afterwards, and there's still a hope and a hunger for just a straightforward, clear Anglican liturgical form of a true courageous church. I mean, that's what they're expecting. And so, you know, to the extent that where you might look at various places in ACNA and otherwise, you might be discouraged. You know, you might have some disagreements that you find concerning. That, you know, we're not the only voice, but like, I'd like to think, and I'm grateful that it's been, you know, it's been reflected back to us in some capacity that's just what we're looking for. You know, we're not looking for kind of liturgical purity across the denomination. We're not looking for straitjacket in terms of exactly what each particular diocese looks like or how each person preaches or any of that. But there were some foundational and core convictions, theological convictions, and then by extension, sort of cultural postures that established this church. And it was inspiring, and it was encouraging, and it was a breath of fresh air, and it was a light. And I'm not in the least bit saying that light has gone out, but you know, it's like Chesterton's white fence, right? I mean, you've got to repaint the fence every week, unless it gets dirty. And I think this is in part, we're in our small little part way. You know, I believe that's at least what we're trying to do. And you know, the more the better. You know, it's great. I've been heartened to see, you know, more, you know, Twitter accounts, more. Of course, we can also give credit where credit's due. You know, I'm grateful for George and Kevin, you know, to the extent that they keep the conversation going. You know, you look at the, you know, North American Anglican, you know, you've got these other outlets that sort of cover different facets or aspects of our life together. But you know, that's I keep telling people who get discouraged that you have to be acknowledged that the gates of hell may prevail against a denomination, but it won't prevail against a church that is biblically founded and confessionally pure or true based upon the faith once for all delivered to the saints, as Jude says. And we have that. I mean, we have it. Like the bones are solid. Like we have the history, the, you know, scripture, tradition, and reason, as Hooker says. And you know, I'm as we keep saying, you know, we're not ready to not just not leave, but I have, you know, measured and sober hope for our life together and the future of the ACNA, and look forward to, you know, looking back in our 600th episode retrospective with you know, even more sense of gratitude for the responsibility the Lord has given us to shepherd and to steward for the next generations.
Maybe we'll have more grandchildren to celebrate as well.
600 episodes, what are they, 5 more years? I'll still be, we got started late, as you know, so I'll be, let's say, I hope I won't be a grandfather, but I hope I might be, I hope I can welcome some of your grandchildren in by then.
Well, that is going to be the end of episode 300. Thanks, as always, for listening to Stand Firm. If you want to keep the conversation, you know how to be in touch. Rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Send us an email at mailbag@standfirminfaith.com or join the Anglicans for the Gospel Facebook group. Thanks to J.D. Koch and Matt Kennedy. I'm Nick Lannon, and Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Until then, by the grace of God and Jesus Christ, we'll be standing firm.